My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now. Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. I'll be with my friends. I'm just trying to make a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC. Tweet me at Jim Cramer. Every day, some analyst comes up with something positive about how artificial intelligence is going to change the world. Every day, it moves up a stock, maybe two. These stocks then produce pin action that spreads throughout the market. Then some other analysts will come out and say AI will boost our GDP growth by an extra percentage point or maybe 2 points. But we also have more skeptical analysts warning you to look out because it's all hype. And that includes days like today. Dow gained 169 points, S&P advanced 0.62%. NASDAQ jumped 1.02%. You know why? Because the AI bull story triumphed over the AI bear story. Tonight, I want to explain why the AI bulls could actually be right. I want to talk about why the bears are likely wrong. Today's a good example of this pin action phenomenon. This morning, we got a strong push to own Adobe, one of my longtime favorites, because of how its software can be used with supercomputers that are at the heart of generative AI to develop new things with greater ease than we thought. Keep that in mind. It's a terrific concept, but for many of you, it's just too ethereal to understand. Some would say it's too 30,000 feet high for most people not in technology or in the software stocks to truly understand it. I keep running up against that all the time when I bump into you on the street. Now, see, I'm actually blessed to have someone who is currently using it, a relative. And I'm going to tell you what it really means because she tells it in just plain out English. My relative is a dressmaker. She makes floral dresses. Before Adobe Firefly, the new Adobe product that utilizes artificial intelligence, if she wanted to make a dress, say, how about one with a fruit-related pattern? It was hard to figure out how it would look. See, if you place the drawing, say, of a lemon near the shoulder, that lemon would literally knock everything else off kilter. Might take 2 weeks of redesign to get everything back to on track. Keep in mind, this person is not some amateur hobbyist. This is a professional dressmaker. How to try to figure out putting a lemon here rather than here without destroying everything. Using Adobe Firefly powered by artificial intelligence, the same change, the same exact change, which is moving the lemon from here to here, it can be done in minutes. She says 2 minutes. And it's always better than the old version. It never makes mistakes. That doesn't mean Firefly is going to destroy dozens of jobs, does it? It doesn't mean you're going to make a fortune from it. But a designer who only has so many hours in her day to work, she just got an extra 2 days worth of time. Hey, what's that worth? Again, hard to determine, but it's worth a great deal to the designer. Maybe that's what matters. So you can see how enticing the software might be to all sorts of creative professionals. And that's probably the chief reason why Adobe stock soared nearly 5% today. Should it be up that much? Oh, boy, that's a subjective question. Now, I could argue the dress issue can be iterated thousands of times, maybe hundreds of thousands of times, over many different professions, which offers a lot more creativity, a lot more productivity. What does that mean for America's gross domestic product? Your guess is as good as mine. But that's the very definition of productivity, isn't it? And that's what the revolution's about. If you want to see how many different examples of improved productivity there are, I got one way for you to do it, but no one's... All you need to do is do this. Go to NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang's Computex speech on the NVIDIA website, the speech he gave in Taiwan. Now, he's got a bunch of examples. I've pushed this speech probably to 50 people in the last 2 weeks. I only know one person who watched it and figures he's one of the greatest industrialists of our time and has a tremendous thirst to learn. You should adopt his techniques. So for the uninformed, let me go over what he's saying, and then you can decide if what Jensen's going with the hype or if he's going to reality. The most important productivity improvement that Jensen sees coming from AI is in the biggest industry in the world, and that's the multi-trillion dollar factory manufacturing business, the making of factories. The business, oddly, is a lot like the dress example I just gave you. Every single time that you build a factory, the biggest, most complicated issue is what's known as the change order, the new lemon on the dress. A change order precipitates many other change orders, which are the real cost to manufacturing things. Imagine if you could make, let's say, a twin of that factory using a supercomputer and artificial intelligence. Every time you wanted to make a change, you just made it on the digital twin first. See how it works. See what it moves. Right now, BMW is about to build a factory that was first imagined with a digital twin. Again, we don't know how much money is being saved. The plant's being built right now. But we know it's going to produce 150,000 autos in Hungary in 2025. And we can't say how much it's going to mean to the bottom line. It hasn't even pushed a car through yet. But that said, the digital twin could end up saving billions of dollars in construction costs and in time. Again, put that in the equation. It's a pedestrian use. For certain, but it reduces waste. By the way, Jensen's driven by waste more than anything else when I talk to him, and it's more efficient, it's cheaper. So what's it worth again? We're not able to calculate it, darn it. However, if you remove the largest amount of friction from the biggest industry in the world, you can see a real GDP impact. That's not nonsense. Of course, the problem with calculating what AI will mean is that so much of it is business to business, not business to you, meaning it's totally invisible to the consumer unless you use it at work. For example, Alpha called Foxconn. They outsourced assembler computers and other gadgets. They use AI to detect manufacturing defects, so many others do too. NVIDIA says they can save $6 trillion in quality control if they're implemented worldwide. Okay, there's $6 trillion. Highly personalized ads generated for you by AI could revolutionize the $700 billion advertising industry. Automatic speech recognition could replace the poor customer service representative who gets asked the same question over and over again. Jack in the Box is using it right now in the drive-thru. Its CEO, Darren Harris, told us that not only does the bot save on the cost of an employee, it actually does a better job with fewer mistakes, better prompts for upsells, makes you buy a bigger milkshake. He's tried to fool it many times. He never has been able to. The quick serve industry rocked by labor shortages, it's not going to be the same once people figure out what Jack in the Box has done. Equipment that needs to be towed or moved around using big forklifts will now be able to be placed on robots and programmed where to go, something that could save who knows what. Jensen calculated that the robots will save 70% of the time it would take humans to do the same work. Again, right to the bottom line, but very pedestrian, very prosaic. What makes this more exciting is that NVIDIA has teamed up with Google Cloud, Meta, and Microsoft to explore the possibilities. Oracle is going to be partner too, and NVIDIA itself can be hired directly. These companies are salivating because the giant GPU that NVIDIA recently unveiled, which is all in the video, by the way, can process, and this is what really gets me down, because I don't understand any of these numbers, but some of the younger people might, people given to math. This processes 1 quintillion floating points per second. You know what a quintillion is? It's a billion billion. Or written out, it's 1 followed by 18 zeros. That level of computing power doesn't mean anything to me. It's incomprehensible. But to some people, they know that this changes everything. Because these speeds are a quantum leap versus what we had before, NVIDIA got orders for $4 billion more equipment than it thought it would just 3 months ago. It's the speed. Now, I know none of this is even remotely exciting. It's not exciting that Cadence, one of their partners, makes the casings, that Marvell and Broadcom make the connecting pipes, or that ServiceNow has teamed up with NVIDIA to make your office more efficient. I know it means so little to you. It's just all of this business-to-business productivity that cuts waste, lowers costs, and frees up people to be more efficient. That's why I mentioned the lemon dress, okay? Not as boring, but you can see the value. Honestly, I wish there were more to it. That there was something that, like I was thinking the other day, how about if AI could put a man on Mars in 2 days? How about if AI could win the war for Ukraine? How about if it could solve world hunger? No, it can't do any of that stuff. And maybe that's why it leaves so many of you cold or in the dark. But here's the bottom line. When you consider the scale of the business-to-business opportunity, you can see why AI might be worth far more than most people realize, even if it's too early to calculate the exact numbers. I know there's a lot of hype here, and in some individual cases, it is overblown. But anybody who tells you that the AI theme's pure hype, that person is only fooling herself.
They know nothing!
Let's go to Annie in Rhode Island, please. Annie.
Hi, Jim. It's an honor. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Annie. How can I help?
Oh, I just want to thank you for being such a great teacher all these years.
Thank you. And that's what I want to do. Thank you. I'm living ambitiously. I'm teaching everything.
Great. So this stock I've had for about a year and a half. In October, it took a big tumble. I just can't believe that there's not endless demand for what they do, and the price of real estate keeps going up. So why the big drop in share prices? And should I hang on to American Tower?
American Tower has been a very bad stock to own. Crown Castle has been even worse. These stocks turn to be very linked to, far more linked than we thought, to the bond market. And as rates went up, these went down. But at 190, I do not bless selling it. I bless holding it. Let's go to Tommy in California. Tommy.
Hi, Jim. The company I'm calling about makes popular shoes. They've recently been expanding their offering, and it looks like they're even moving into activewear. Can you give me the scoop on Skechers?
Okay, they've been in activewear for a long time. Now, Skechers is a sink or swim stock. I've recommended this at times. It's made people a fortune, and at times it's cut me off the knees. That's why right now I like On. I think it's at these prices, On, it's actually a better buy than Skechers all the way up. Okay, we're in the early innings of the AI revolution. I'm trying to explain it to you in simple ways, but it's not a simple concept. I know there are a lot of people who think it's hype out there, but anyone who thinks that is really missing the main point. On Main Money Tonight, the IPO class of 2021 had some enterprise software stinkers. But there were two names that stood out this earnings season from the group that I think investors should be paying attention to, if not buying. Then, with recession fear still lurking, should investors turn to precious metals? Streaming company like Wheaton, you know I like the precious metals. I'm checking in with the company CEO. And we're not seeing the large layoffs that you probably expect at this point in the cycle. So what does that mean for our economy? I'll break down the situation. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
As we reach the end of the off-cycle earnings season, where we hear from tons of enterprise software companies, it's become clear that the market's finally behaving like a meritocracy again. And that's one where the good ones rally and the bad ones plummet. That hasn't been the case for a long time around here, as the cloud software stocks have more or less traded as a block. First on the way up, then last year on the way down. Didn't matter how good they were doing before rebounding as a group once again in early 2023. But now we've got a very group of winners and losers, making this much more of a stock market for people like me who pick stocks and for people like you who want to get winners. And that's why tonight I want to focus on a pair of software stocks from the ill-fated IPO class of 2021 that have nevertheless found themselves in the winners column this year. I'm talking about Confluent, and that's CFLT. And Samsara, and the symbol is IoT, yes, Internet of Things, for you home gamers. The former's up 56% for the year, while the latter has more than doubled. So what exactly is going on at these companies, and what should we do with their stocks up here? Let's start with Confluent and then circle back to Samsara. Confluent's a data play. I call it a data analytics play like so many others, but management adamantly describes itself as a data infrastructure company. They claim to have, quote, pioneered a new category of data infrastructure designed to connect all the application systems and data layers of a company around a real-time central nervous system, end quote. Basically, they make a new kind of data infrastructure software that replaces the old database model, and this new kind of infrastructure has become essential to their digitally savvy clients. See, these days, everybody wants to harness their treasure troves of data, but you need to the right kind of setup to do that as efficiently as possible. That's where Confluent comes in. At the same time, their whole thing is built on something called Apache Kafka. That's an open source software platform that's used by over 80% of the companies in the Fortune 100, meaning it's easy for them to adopt Confluent's technology. Within the data food chain, Confluent falls somewhere between data warehousing and analytics plays, and that's like Snowflake, you know, Frank Slootman's company, or the in-house analytics offerings from Amazon Web Services or Google, and of course the classic database companies like Oracle or the red-hot MongoDB. As of the end of the first quarter, they had just under 4,700 customers, including some notable names across a host of industries, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, Netflix, Walmart, think, pick anybody, right? Dick's Sporting Goods, Humana. So this is a very legitimate software company. What about the financials? Like most software names that came public in 2021, Confluent was originally a pure growth story. They had 64% revenue growth in 2021, and that only slowed to 51% last year. The flip side of that is that they had zero profitability in either year. They didn't even have positive earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, let alone positive free cash flow. For most of last year, the market turned on pure growth stories like that, which is why the stock was untouchable for the bulk of last year, at least until the market-wide bottom last fall. Money losers with fast growth had gone out of style in the Wall Street fashion show. But earlier this year, Confluent finally got religion on the need for profitability, like so many other enterprise software outfits. When they reported in late January, management also announced a big restructuring effort. It was surprising. That included layoffs of 8% of the workforce and a goal of reaching break-even operating margins by the end of the year. Confluent actually slightly lowered its revenue growth forecast at the same time, although it's still at 30%. But Wall Street lapped it up because the pivot to profitability is what investors wanted, which I've said over and over again, the big pivot. Growth at all costs had gone out of style more than a year before. Now the market's much more interested in profitable growth. While Confluent isn't there yet, you know, they got a plausible roadmap to be there. Now, fast forward to the next earnings report on May 3rd, and Confluent did pretty darn well. They delivered better than expected sales, a smaller than expected loss, and an over 130% dollar-based net retention rate. That last one is huge. The net retention rate tells you if existing customers are expanding their business with the company or scaling it back. Anything over 100% means they're giving Confluent more money. 130%, wow, terrific. These guys also had 89% growth rate for their cloud products. Again, very impressive. On top of that, management gave you strong guidance for the current quarter, and they raised their full-year earnings forecast. They still expect a net loss, but a much smaller one. Put it all together, that was a terrific quarter, which is why the stock jumped 16% the next day. It really hasn't looked back since. In fact, Confluent's now up nearly 75% just since it reported a little over a month ago. All of its year-to-date gains have come in the last few weeks. This thing is red hot. And Confluent's hardly alone here. There are plenty of data or data-adjacent stocks that have finally caught fire this year if you're spending some time in the wilderness. Palantir, I know you like that one. It's up 136%. That was great last quarter. Dynatrace up 32%. Snowflake up 21%. A tepid quarter, but people still like it. And Splunk up 15%, a good start in a big term. There's a very good reason for this. These companies are all secondary winners from, yes, I know, the generative AI boom. The way generative AI systems like ChatGPT work, it's by feeding them mountains of data. That's how the AI learns. Although I'm kind of using the term learns very broadly here. So any software that can help pull, organize, store, or access data is suddenly a lot more valuable than it was before ChatGPT. On the latest conference call, Chairman and CEO Jay Kreps got a question about AI. He called it an accelerator of his business. Listen to this. Quote, "Already we have customers that are doing this for real, including a large travel company that's building real-time context data and using that to power chat inferences for their customers. And I expect that to be a pattern that is more common," end quote. He also explained where Confluent fits into the AI story. Quote, "Our role in that architecture is kind of helping customers assemble that real-time context data that would go into asking the right questions, powering the right queries, getting the right context in the interface. That's where we fit into the architecture," end quote. So let's put it all together. I like Confluent, the company, a lot. Great story. And the stock, you know me, I hate chasing them up 75%. Yeah, especially if it's done a little more than a month. However, you can still make a valuation argument for this one because it trades at a sizable discount to both Snowflake and MongoDB on an enterprise value to sales basis. Still one more important metric. That's despite growing much faster than MongoDB and only a bit slower than Snowflake, assuming they can hit that 30% forecast. That said, given how much the stock's run, it wouldn't kill you to wait for a pullback from here to the mid-30s to say, maybe high 20s to pull the trigger. Bottom line, Confluent's finally caught fire because it's a high-quality data infrastructure story that's riding the AI wave. While it's probably too late to go all in up here, you've got my permission to put on a small position and then wait for a chance to buy more as it comes down. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, remember the Internet of Things? Kramer profiles a stock you won't want to miss. Next.
Yeah. Tonight we're highlighting a couple of enterprise software stocks that have exploded higher in the recent weeks. Two members of the dreaded IPO class of 2021 that have turned from losers to winners, and they did it practically overnight. Now, earlier I told you about Confluent, but there's another one that's even, believe it or not, hotter. And that's a company called Samsara, S-A-M-S-A-R-A, which is now up 123% year-to-date, including a 46% run since reported only a week ago. Samsara's main offering is called the Connected Operations Cloud. It's a software system that lets companies gain actionable insights from the Internet of Things, hence the symbol IoT. At the same time, they do a small amount of hardware sales, mostly from selling the IoT devices that monitor customers' physical operations and feed data to their software platforms. This is a different kind of company. I really like this one. Haven't seen its model elsewhere. Basically, Samsara helps businesses digitize their physical operations and become more efficient in the process. Their data platform collects video footage, motion detection data, GPS location data, energy consumption data, asset utilization data, and almost any reading you might get from a vehicle. The idea is to help their clients visualize their physical operations in real time, all on a single platform. Novel. How does it work? For example, a large municipal government reduced fleet downtime for its cars and trucks by 28% using Samsara's platform. This is smart technology. A large garbage company used it to achieve a 58% drop in speeding incidents. Now you get the idea, right? Business is good. In its last fiscal year, Samsara had 52% revenue growth, 42% recurring revenue growth. Very strong. Now, it's still unprofitable, but its margins are moving in the right direction. When these guys reported in early March, they delivered a magnificent full-year forecast. Although after an initial run, the stock stayed range-bound for the next 3 months. That is until Samsara reported again last week. The most recent numbers were nothing short of spectacular. Better than expected results on every major line: billing, sales, annual recurring revenue, all of the earnings lines. They're now very close to breaking even. Free cash flow, key metric for me, looks like it's about to turn positive. At the same time, Samsara gave terrific guidance for the current quarter, and management once again raised their full-year forecast. They're now talking about 33% revenue growth with more or less break-even earnings. Ooh, I like that. But as good as the numbers were, the story that Samsara told on the conference call was even better. First, management explained that they could report such excellent numbers because they're winning a lot of new deals, especially large deals. How's that possible when so many other enterprise software players have hit the wall? Samsara says they're two sides of the same coin. Businesses have gotten more discerning when they buy technology, and Samsara's been able to convince prospective customers to go with them because their products have a proven track record of helping customers control costs and delivering a solid return on investment. They've got all this technology in every machine, every device, every vehicle. Samsara can help them do something useful with all of this data, and that saves money. That's what it tends to do. Don't take it from me. After the quarter, our favorite software analyst, a fellow by the name of Sterling Auty, A-U-T-Y. He works at SVB MoffettNathanson. He told us, and he put it perfectly, actually, quote, Samsara is a company that is offering solutions that can be deployed quickly and save companies money. These are the types of projects that get the green light in tough economic times. Also, it helps that Samsara's prices per device, not per employee, and the spend comes out of the operating budgets, not the IT budgets, end quote. Interesting differences there. So in an environment where other software companies have trouble closing deals, the so-called elongation before they can close, these guys have no problem winning tons of new business. They added a record 138 large customers in the first quarter, including one of the biggest names out there, United Rentals, URI. Of course, any good tech story these days needs, an AI angle, even if management practically makes it up out of whole cloth. Samsara's actually got a convincing argument for its AI connection, though. Specifically, their technology collected 6 trillion, that's right, with a T, data points last year. The whole idea here is that they help customers gain insights from this constant influx of Internet of Things data. Then they're able to use the data they've accumulated from customers in specific industries and then create AI tools that are particularly useful for that space. On the conference call, CEO Sanjit Biswas talked about how one of their clients is using Samsara's vehicle telematics system and expanding from that into an AI-powered video-based safety application, something that can improve the safety of its vehicles and, more important from a corporate perspective, lower their insurance premiums. Very hard to do. Based on the savings here, Samsara says this customer can probably earn their money back in about 4 months. So, yes, we've got a real value-based idea here. Now, Samsara's stock has finally risen above its original IPO price thanks to its big rally over the past week. At this point, it's gotten pricey. Enterprise value to sales multiple 14. Remember, that's how we value these unprofitable software names. You see, in a perfect world, of course, I'd wait for a pullback to a cheaper level, just like I told you with Confluent. This one's so good, I don't think you're going to get it. I really don't. You actually probably have to add a small position here and then maybe wait for it to come down. Like we do that with the investment club, where you just got to put some on and then you can buy more as it goes lower. I'm afraid that there is much more upside here. That's how good the story is. Last thing before I move on from these new enterprise software companies. Both Confluent and Samsara have, and this is very interesting, they have investor meetings coming up. Confluent's investor day is next Tuesday, June 13th, while Samsara has an investor day the following week on June 22nd. Now, I'm not sure what it'll mean for these stocks, but these events are often positive catalysts. But given how much they've already run, maybe they could tell incredible stories and they might not get that much lift from here. But the bottom line, if you like the sound of Confluent or Samsara after what you heard tonight, and I think you should, I'm begging you, see what you can learn from these upcoming investor events in order to get the full investment case directly from the horse's mouth. I like them both right here. Of course, I like them better on weakness. Chris in Virginia. Chris.
Hey, Jim. My name's Chris Pastorelli. I'm 28. I own my own firm in Northern Virginia, and I've been into stocks since I was a kid. I'm really glad
fabulous.
To be able to speak to you today.
Thank you. Fabulous. Congratulations on your success.
Thank you so much, Jim. No, I radically appreciate that. So I got a good one for you today. It's no MongoDB or Datadog, but it's Twilio. I think it's a great, I think it's a great company. They just partnered with Google the other day on their LLMs, their large language models, to be able to assist Twilio Segment in understanding that data that's running through their Segment platform. They've been pegged at like a really good growth rate of 40% CAGR, sort of since their IPO. I know they dipped down a bit, but I see this company, they have $4 billion of revenue. I see them growing at 25% CAGR for 3 years. Getting to $8 billion of revenue.
I'm with you. I had my doubts about Jeff Lawson's company for a long time. I loved it for a while. Jeez, it went all the way up. Then it's come all the way down. I did not catch at the bottom. It did trade 20 points lower from here. But I think everything you said, Chris, is true. I think they're making a comeback, and I think it's time to be able to say, buy half Twilio now and half if it comes in. Let's go to Nick in Virginia, please. Nick.
Hey, Jim.
Nick, what's up?
This stock has been sold off in the last year, and you may have heard we have an election coming up next year. There could be some good political advertising money coming this company's way. And they also have no significant debt maturities in the next 3 years, but they do have some coming up in 2026. Are those debt maturities something to be concerned about now? The stock is GTN Gray Television.
Yeah, you have to worry. The stock trades is so low that it tells me that the company's going to need money. I don't like anything that's involved with local TV or local radio. And boy, that has kept people out of a lot of bad stocks. So that's my take, Nick. Thank you for the call. If you like the case we just laid out for Samsara and Confluent, and boy, that Samsara, I really like that right here, then pay attention to their upcoming investor meetings, maybe a big catalyst here, and get ready to buy them on weakness, although I am blessing a Samsara acquisition small right now. Much more Mad Money at putting my exclusive of wheat and precious metals. You know I'm a big fan of the gold miners, but could a precious metals player with a streaming kicker be the way to go? I'm talking to the CEO, very interesting story. Then why does the employment situation seem like more people are being hired than being fired? I think I found the reason. I'm going to share it with you and how it impacts the world of inflation. And of course, all your calls rapid fire to tonight's edition of The Lightning Round. Plus, please don't miss NBC's Inspiring America. That airs this Saturday and Sunday. As we head to break, let me give you a sneak peek of today's show's Craig Melvin talking to Reba McEntire about her efforts to save her hometown from economic ruin.
Folks who are watching this, you've heard about how Reba McEntire has helped save her tiny town. What do you want them to take away from this story?
Well, I want them to take away that Reba was a small part of a great story, a successful story, one that's still growing, one that's still thriving, and one that's talked about all over the state of Oklahoma.
Now that inflation's cooling and the debt ceiling crisis is in the rearview mirror, for heaven's sake, thank you. Wow, is that good. But then you got to ask, what do we do with the precious metals? I'm talking about gold and silver. While they pulled back a bit since the debt ceiling, they're still up big off their lows last fall. So what if you want to have a safer way to play gold and silver? I want to introduce you to Wheaton Precious Metals, which is what's known as a streaming company. They don't mine for gold and silver. Instead, they front the money for a mining operation in exchange for the right to buy the resulting metals at a discount. Not equity, actual. When you buy something like Wheaton Precious Metals, you're betting on gold and silver or palladium or cobalt without the operational risk that comes from owning an actual miner. I think it's an intriguing story. So let's check in with Randy Smallwood. He's the president and CEO of Wheaton Precious Metals to learn more. Mr. Smallwood, welcome to Mad Money.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Good to see you.
Okay, so Randy, I just like precious metals, always have since I started the show. I think this is a very intriguing way for people to get exposure. I want everyone to have at least 10% of their assets in precious metals. Tell me why this isn't the best way to be involved.
Well, the advantage of the streaming model is that we take out so much of the cost risk of a traditional mining investment. But we still deliver all the benefits, all the rewards, all the organic growth, all the expansion potential, and the obviously the price exposure. And the commodity price exposure is even levered because we do have that base production cost as the gold and silver gets delivered to us. So it's a great, low-risk, high-quality way to invest into precious metals.
And how have people done since they started with your company?
We've got a lot of happy shareholders, and with our growth profile, we're going to have even more happy shareholders over the next few years.
Now, you put in a huge amount of money since you started. How have you done with that amount of money?
Well, it's actually interesting. Earlier this year, we reached, I guess, what you'd call the payback level, where we've invested about $10 billion into the mining industries, a number of different projects. We got over 20 projects delivering metal to us and a whole bunch of development projects. But earlier this year, we surpassed $10 billion received back. So we've reached that sort of payback stage. And considering we've got 30 years of reserves, another 10 years of M&I resources, and 20 after that, altogether 60 years of production still waiting to come out over the next while, we're in great shape.
What kind of growth are you predicting, say, between now and 2027?
50% growth. This year we'll do 630,000 gold equivalent ounces. We should be very close to 1 million gold equivalent ounces by 2027. As I said earlier on, during our first quarter results this year, this is the first of many quarters where every quarter is going to be better and better than the previous one. Good, strong growth both from existing brownfields assets. And we've got a bunch of new projects that will be delivering metal to us. So it's really exciting times.
For years, when people told me that they wanted silver exposure, I always said Wheaton. Now, that is basically the kind of the roots of the company. But you right now are chair of the World Gold Council. And yet I understand that you share some of our viewers' like for silver.
Yeah, it's interesting. As the chair of the World Gold Council, my favorite metal is silver. We started this company focused in the silver space, but the silver space, and that's one of the reasons why I like silver, is there's just not a lot of it out there. It's really tough to find. Very few silver mines in the world. Most silver is produced as a byproduct, and most of it comes from lead zinc mines, and there's just not a lot of new lead zinc mines getting built. So there's going to be a supply. Well, there already is a bit of a supply shortage on the silver side, and we're seeing that. Add some strength to the silver price. We just haven't seen the move that we expect so far.
Well, I think there'll be a great move, so I agree with you. Now, one thing that's very interesting is that single source mines that actually are pretty attractive, if I could have a portfolio of them, happen to be drawn to you, and you get great deals for your shareholders, not just your stakeholders, but for your shareholders.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, right now, the public markets, if you sit and look at how mining companies are trading their shares, especially the earlier stage single asset development companies, they're having a tough time getting support from shareholders. No doubt a little bit higher risk when you're only building one mine going forward and you don't have access to operating cash flow. Well, streamers, we're the long-term investors of today. We're the ones that step in and support these companies on a go-forward basis. And our cost of capital to these companies is so much more attractive than issuing shares and diluting their existing shareholder base. So we have a long list of opportunities we're working on right now. We just announced another one a couple of weeks ago, and we're expecting to close a few more acquisitions. And so we're going to add even more to this already very strong growth profile. This is a great time to be in the streaming business.
All right, one last question, Randy. I'm involved and have watched the crypto market. It's very opaque. It's difficult to tell what goes on. I think Wheaton Precious Metals is probably the least opaque metals company I've come across. I can't ask you to speculate on a Binance or any of those different outfits, but why don't you, if you can, just tell our viewers, if you want to hedge, which one might be a more, let's say, transparent hedge for people who don't like the fiat currencies?
There's no doubt going into the precious metals space. I mean, that's what gold has been forever, is a store of value, a measure of value that lasts. It's apolitical. It's not subject to political influence. And I think that's even been reinforced over the last year here. We see central banks buying at record levels as they're moving into gold because they realize that it's not subject to political influence. And that's what gold has always provided. That's what precious metals have always provided. It's you can't copy it. There's only one. There's only one gold. There's only one silver. And as a store of value, it's lasted for thousands of years, and it will last for thousands of years.
Well, why don't I leave it right there, and I'm glad you and I are very much simpatico on this issue. Randy Smallwood, who is the president and CEO of Wheaton Precious Metals. Sir, thank you for coming on Mad Money.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Jim.
All right, we'll be back after a break.
Coming up, what's in your mind, Kramerica? Give us a call. The lightning round is storming the NYSE. Next.
It is time. It's time for the lightning round. Chris, by Ralph Rosen, another statement. Play this out. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski? Yeah, time for the lightning round. Chris, let's start with Grace in California. Grace.
Hi, Mr. Kramer, longtime listener.
Excellent.
What is your outlook on Plug Power?
I've given up on Plug Power. They've made too many disappointments. You only get so many strikes in this game. Let's go to Nick in Pennsylvania. Nick. Nick? Go ahead, Nick. You're
Hello?
Up. Yeah, Nick, it's Jim.
Oh. No, this is Jason.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jason. Jason, what's up?
I was wondering about SMR, NuScale Power.
No, I think it's all hype, not rigorous enough for me to recommend on this show. Let's go to William in Arizona. William.
Booyah from Sun City. I have Lyondell Basil Industries.
A very inexpensive
LYB.
Stock. I like it. I think you can own it for the long term. How about Bruce in Florida? Bruce.
Hey, Jim. Novocure released results of a trial that demonstrated a slight increase in overall survival. And
yeah, but not enough. And I was surprised that it wasn't better after all the things they've done for brain cancer. I'm going to have to accept the verdict of the stock market and say stay away. How about Terry in Washington? Terry.
Youngstown State Penguin Booyah to you, Jimmy. I'm a club member.
Yes.
I've been following you since we both had hair. Hey, buddy, I got a question.
Since I was seven.
What is the best play for the industrial / power grid? I'm looking at Eaton. What do you think?
You're absolutely right, Eaton. That's why, again, it hit a 52-week high. If it ever comes in, bye-bye-bye. I've been talking with Jeff Marks, probably showing this one for the investing club. That's how good it is. I think you got a real horse sense. Nick in Florida. Nick.
Oh, booyah, Jimmy Chill. It's Nick No More New York. Finally, fresh air Florida. And I've been watching your show since the days of Dan Dorfman. I'm watching that channel.
Oh, my. Mordor, what's up?
I want to congratulate my dearest, sweetest friend, Denny, on her confirmation today. And I want to thank you, Jim, for what you do for all the viewers.
Thank you.
Stock is a leader in its niche, but it's in a space that's undergone some recent pain that might not be over. It's a REIT, but this might be the time to look back and say that we should have bought. Is it too early to pull the trigger on letter O, Realty Income?
No, you want to buy that one. I think that's an absolutely great idea. Thank you for the kind words, but boy, I think Realty Income is terrific. Let's go to Billy in North Carolina. Billy.
Jim. At your recommendation, I'm in Owens Corning at around 28. I've held it for years. Please tell me what to do with it now.
Okay, I want you to sell half of it right now, take it off the table, and then let the other half. That used to be because there was a previous CEO, two CEOs ago, used to come on and told a great story. I'm glad you did it. Thank you. Let's go to Chris in Alabama. Chris.
Hey, Jimmy Chill. Booyah.
To Chill speaking. What's up?
Long time, second time. Thank you for everything that you do.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
So AI seems like the next major secular trend. And I found an AI-enabled robotics company that specializes in supply chain management and warehouses, and that Walmart took an 11% stake in. So with the coming boom in onshoring and factory spend because of the Inflation Reduction Act and other federal increases in infrastructure spending, what do you think of Symbotic?
Chris, I got to do work on Symbotic. I don't know it well enough. I will do that work. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
We spend way too much time trying to figure out why more people keep being hired and not enough time figuring out why more people aren't being fired. Right now, we have this temporary lull in the cliched red-hot job market, where we actually are waiting for something negative to happen that will make the Fed declare victory in its fight against inflation. At this point in a rate hike cycle, you'd expect a lot more job losses than we're seeing. And those layoffs cause people to spend less money, which is what historically stops inflation. We're not seeing that now, though. And I think I finally realized why. I think we lack creative destruction. Ordinarily, companies would merge and then fire a bunch of people with overlapping jobs. But lately, mergers keep getting blocked, or at least delayed, by the Federal Trade Commission. I know it sounds almost quaint to many of our younger audience, but we have these things called doctrines, where our government wants to preserve the right of the consumer to not be price gouged by powerful enterprises that have been put together by rich money men, malefactors of great wealth, as Teddy Roosevelt called them back in 1907. Back then, business is more or less called the shots because the government was much weaker than it is now. Too weak to stop companies from stifling competition or colluding to keep prices high or outright monopolizing entire industries. Now, the FTC was created a little over a century ago precisely to stop this kind of bad behavior. Ever since, they tried to thread the needle between allowing enough mergers to create more efficient entities without allowing so many mergers that you end up with little competition. Sometimes it's leaning more to one side than the other side, but there were always plenty of mergers that the FTC approved. That all changed when Joe Biden appointed someone named Lina Khan to the FTC chair. She's upended the doctrine and invented a new one, which more or less views all mergers as hurting the consumer solely in order to help the malefactors of great wealth. I wish I were exaggerating. But Khan's actions have certainly created the impression that she sees all mergers as inherently anti-competitive and enriching the entitled classes. Now, you could argue we have a system of checks and balances in this country. Lina Khan's FTC doesn't have absolute authority to block these deals. She can be overruled by a federal judge. There's also the Justice Department's Antitrust Division, run by a pretty reasonable guy, Jonathan Cantor, former corporate lawyer from Paul Weiss. The difference between these two, you know, is just really stark. But because Khan's so dead set against practically all mergers, most of the major executives that I know are saying, you know what, let's not merge at all. Forget about it. Maybe we wait and see if the Republicans win next year, because if we do anything, the FTC is just going to block it anyway. And you know what? They're right. Can't blame them. But that impact is creating a world where many industries have no rationalization at all, or certainly no creative destruction. We aren't seeing a fraction of the mergers we need to see in retail for brick and mortar to possibly stay competitive. Entertainment needs maybe half the companies that currently exist. We need far fewer and better drug companies. We have so many oil producers that it's nuts. Same with restaurants, ad firms, real estate investment trusts. I could go on and on. Only airlines need more competition than I can see. But I'm pretty sure Lina Khan's FTC would try to block any deal in any of the industries I just mentioned. Any. There's one other industry with too many people that Khan doesn't really preside over, and that's the banks. We could actually do probably without 4,000 banks. It might not even matter these days, given all the fintech bank alternatives that have been created in recent years. But we have a doctrine against bank consolidation, and I like that. It's only been breached once, the J.P. Morgan shotgun wedding for First Republic recently, and the regulators only let that happen to stop a bank run. If Khan weren't FTC chair, we'd be seeing huge layoffs in this country right now as businesses merge and fire people. Maybe you think her view is a positive. It's certainly good for the people keeping their jobs, but it's bad for inflation because it means the price of labor stays stubbornly high. Khan's one of the greatest creators of wage inflation in our nation's history. And from the stock market's perspective, that's a very bad thing. Same for the Fed. Hey, same for you when it comes to your costs. As long as Khan's there, we likely won't see the giant layoffs that we'd normally get at this point in the cycle. Inflation killers for certain. Whether you like it or hate it, at least now you know a big reason why inflation is far more sticky than it should be right now. I like to say there's always a bull market summer. I promise to try to find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.